Blog Talk Radio.
Due to the wonders of technology, you are listening to the PW Torch Livecast for Friday, May the 19th, 2017. I'm Bruce Mitchell, Senior Torch Columnist. You can follow me on Twitter at MitchellPWTorch. Please do that. And you can also call into this show, 515-605-9345. 515-605-9345. We have our normal co-host, Rich Fan, is on assignment, chasing around some mouse ears or some damn thing. But anyway, he will be back next week. I will be up sometime this weekend with Wade Keller on Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, hopefully sooner rather than later, but we'll see how all that goes. But like I said, the wonders of technology. I'm just so happy. This is right before Backlash, WWE Backlash, which of course is the lash back from WrestleMania and is a SmackDown show, SmackDown pay-per-view. And I'd be interested in your picks, your takes on where everything stands with Backlash. Of course, anything else you'd like to talk about, New Japan Super Juniors are going on right now, and I have not been watching yet, but hopefully I will be jumping in on that, assuming all the technology works for me, too. To be taped before Backlash is NXT TakeOver Chicago, which ought to be interesting there too. Lots of things kind of going, lots of things back and forth. I'm really interested to see how Shinsuke Nakamura does in his debut on the main roster on a Sunday night show on the WWE Network. I think as far as in Chicago, he'll do great on the live venue. I think, you know, something new, special, all that, and enough of the ardent fans, of course, at pay-per-view shows, that ought to be something pretty cool. It's going to be interesting to see how the reaction is across the rest of the universe, the rest of the people that weren't watching NXT for the last year or so, that weren't watching New Japan for the last several years, how this goes and what kind of reaction there is with him. Of course, Jinder Mahal, his first title shot for the WWE Championship has been put over strong on SmackDown, and we'll see whether how they maneuver that, how they finesse that. AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens ought to be a standout match, you would think, for the U.S. title, and how that goes too. So lots of stuff on as far as this weekend to talk about. Also, if you are in the area where I live in the southeast, in North Carolina and Virginia area, I will be attending, not making an appearance, but, you know, just attending the CWF show on Saturday night. And featuring Trevor Lee, who just had Ultimate X match with Andrew Everett, his longtime opponent / tag team partner / guy that they trained together and all that, and Low Key on Impact, but he'll be at the show, and hopefully we'll see a tag match, hopefully a bunch of standout matches, and Kane Justice and Cecil Miller, which I'm kind of looking forward to. See how that turns out. So if you're in the area, come say hello, come to the show, all that kind of good stuff. So let's do something that we normally do. Oh my gosh, look at this. I sound better than ever, someone says. Well, I do. I look better than ever, too. I'm going to turn on the camera, and, of course, all I'm wearing is my boxer shorts so that you can see that I look better than ever. So, the voice from above that's saying that knows the particulars of this, so what a miracle technology that is. But we're going to go to, instead of last, we're going to go first to Jason from Australia. Jason, welcome to the PW Torch Livecast.
Bruce, and I have to admit, you are sounding pretty good today. You sound fired up. You're ready to go. So, yeah, you're sounding great.
Yeah, I am. I'm channeling some aggression. So, now I'm really aggression.
We had to know that phone was going to call, didn't we?
Yes, we do. Boy, and you don't know how PO'd I am, who's calling me. So anyway, you know, of course, they can call me. They can't come. But all right, anyway, so where do you see what's your level of excitement for Backlash?
I'm intrigued. I'll put it that way. I'm intrigued. I just looked at my email, and I noticed, and I don't know if you can read anything into it, but I noticed the top match that they're promoting, at least on the email header, if you like, or the graphic, is Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles. And then, so that's the top match. And then you've got underneath Orton and Mahal, Nakamura and Ziggler, the tag match and the six women tag. Now, I'm just thinking, is there any chance, knowing that Chicago crowd, that they do end with Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles, and they do Mahal and Orton in the middle, because they know that smart fans might think, hang on, if they're going to put Mahal and Orton in the middle, there might be a chance here that they might actually go with Mahal. Do you think they might use that line of thinking just to create a bit of intrigue?
They might, and also, it's just... You know, if they're because if they're thinking to go with Mahal, and there's this little voice inside my head going, Randy Orton's having a very mediocre, very unmemorable reign this time as WWE champion, and just to, you know, just go on and, you know, instead of just putting over Mahal before the match and then Orton beats him in the match, just go ahead and make him the champion. Go ahead and see what you can do even further with this. Not that it's working that well or that great, but if you're going to, I doubt they put that on last. That's a lot of pressure on that guy. And Randy Orton is, you know, I think Randy Orton's doing what he has to do or doing enough to be professional and not much more than that. And so that does make sense. And then have the last, you know, have that last match be that U.S. title match. And for a few weeks, they were pushing, AJ Styles was acting like, and so was, of course, Kevin Owens, that the United States of America title was the most important thing on SmackDown. So in this case, even if Randy Orton wins, I think that's a pretty smart way to set everything up. I wouldn't put Nakamura on last. I'd do Special Attraction with Dolph Ziggler. I'd save Nakamura for the last match main event for when he's in a more important match. This is like the introduction. So, and this is an important match. So yeah, that does make sense. Lineup wise, we'll see if they stick with it or if that's what they're doing, but that's a good point. That does make sense.
So if you're booking it, would you put Mahal over if it comes to a yes or no answer? And considering the ratings now, we don't know if the ratings, because the ratings across Raw and SmackDown have gone down. And I guess there's an argument to say, well, the ratings have gone down because people don't see Jinder Mahal as a legitimate threat to Orton. Or someone could say, well, the ratings have gone down because Randy Orton's very style as a champion and just style as a character. If it's up to you, would you go all in with Mahal and just see where it takes you?
Well, I'd play the larger game here. I think what's going on with ratings, you know, of course, there's the outside television world and cutting the cord and streaming and what's going on with sports contracts and all the rest of these factors that do factor in certain ways. And even the kind of spectacular, Donald Trump is in the United States, is maybe around the world, but in the United States is a television draw as the president. And so when any kind of story comes up with him, the news networks, you know, draw viewers with that. And so whether that's enough to draw viewers away from Raw, I'm not sure. But what I think's going on is not so much Randy Orton, is just the kind of hackish, lackadaisical booking that we're seeing here, where the entertainment part, the mid-card guys are not so great. And then there's just a lack of focus. There's just so many mistakes and strange choices made in booking everything that you just kind of have that viewers are forced to kind of look at it and go, well, that's Kevin Owens. Well, that's AJ Styles. And I'll watch because it's them, even though I'm not crazy about what's going on throughout these 5 hours of shows on Monday and Tuesday. So, anyway, I would play the long game, and the long game is India. Whether Jinder Mahal can is the one to get over in India, I don't know. But I would want to have him, I would want to go ahead and strike like that, have him have that championship, have him play rich, as Wade Keller's been talking about, have him play rich, arrogant guy, and have that championship and do something new with it. Is he good enough in the ring? I don't know. I don't understand what's going on with his promo style either. I thought last week he had a cold. Maybe he still has a cold. It just seems like there's something missing in how he's projecting. But I think that's something they could fix. I can't imagine that they can't. But even if he fails, go ahead and kind of establish that you've got an Indian star, and that there could be more coming down the pike when and if they're able to crack the culture and crack into the market, which I think is a smart thing to do. And even if they, even if they got a heel champion who's kind of in the middle, when they go to India, it used to be you could push those guys. I think of Dino Bravo in Canada, you could push those guys to the top of the card, and that maybe draw some interest, draw some ratings in a very big market.
No, I agree with you. I think India obviously is just the potential just to crack a fraction of that market. I mean, if you could just convert, a small percentage to network subscribers, I mean, that's just going to do so much for their bottom line as far as subscribers are concerned. So, yeah, I agree with you. I reckon he'll win the championship by hook or crook. It might even rejuvenate Orton a little bit to chase. Always think Orton is better as the chaser as opposed to the champion. As far as his promo style is concerned, this might be a small thing, but what I noticed when he came out to cut that last promo on Orton is that he held the mic further away from his face. I noticed guys like Jericho and The Miz, Cena, they always make sure that mic is close to their mouth so you can get that real bass in your voice and you really project. But, he had it a good distance away from him, and I was thinking to myself, he's coming across a bit soft here. So those are some, tricks of the trade that I'm not sure that he picked up.
And those things can be fixed. Jason, can you stick with us through the commercial? And then I want to bring in some other calls, too, and maybe comment on that. Is that all right?
Go for it.
All right, good deal. Wade Keller was on yesterday on the Thursday livecast with former WWE creative team member Kevin Eck, and here are some details as to how you can listen to that.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, let's go to our first caller. Our first caller, our friend Kylan from New Jersey. Kylan, welcome to the PW Torch Livecast.
Thank you, Bruce. How are you doing this week?
Another week in paradise, bud. What can I say? Summertime's coming.
Yeah, I know you must be ready for that, considering your other job can be quite hectic.
They're all angels. What can I tell you?
You don't have to play that game with me, Bruce.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Kylan.
Not all kids are angels, trust me.
Angels with dirty faces, yes. So, yeah, you don't. So what you got for us?
Well, let's see here. The UK special was quite good, if I do say so myself. If you have not watched it, I believe that should be re-airing in about 45 minutes.
That fits right along with this schedule, yes.
Pete Dunne has the potential to be, I'll just go ahead and say it, even better than William Regal was if he can keep his nose clean and not fall asleep in production meetings.
That's an interesting take early on, because William Regal was very talented, but of course he had problems that kept him. He had some addictions and that he struggled with in wrestling. Walk the Golden Mile, the name of his book, details some of them. But very talented, very well respected act as far as that goes, and still is. So if Pete Dunne can give them that down the line, that would be pretty big. So go ahead, Kyle.
My question for this week concerns Shinsuke Nakamura again. If WWE does not decide to do a long-term program with him and Dolph Ziggler, who should or who will be Shinsuke Nakamura's next opponent or first official program in WWE?
That's a great question. That's a pretty important question. Jason, you want to go ahead and start with that, and then do you have any comments on what Colin was saying about Pete Dunne? But who should if Shinsuke Nakamura, and boy, I hope so. I hope this is like he does his thing, Dolph Ziggler makes him look good, and then we move on from this. It's not a long program with a mid-card guy. It's good as good as Dolph Ziggler is. What do you think about who should be the first opponent for the first program after this for Nakamura?
Yeah, thanks, Bruce, and nice to speak to you, Colin. Good to hear you back on the show. Always enjoy your comments. So, good man. With Shinsuke Nakamura, that is a really good question, because I've been thinking about this. Which heel on the SmackDown side will Nakamura face next after Ziggler? And I have to admit, I've been liking what Ziggler has been doing lately. He has come across very dislikable. So, and I think he's going to do a great job selling. I can just see him taking that Shinkasa and just really making Nakamura look like a $1 million. And I think we sometimes forget about that Ziggler. Yes, sometimes his promos, you know, comes across a bit whiny or whatnot, but it does suit this type of character. And I think, you know, when they were introducing Baron Corbin to the SmackDown audience, Ziggler did a great job of getting Baron Corbin over, especially that end of day's finisher. So after Nakamura is done with Ziggler, that is a tough one. Do they want to put him straight away in the U.S. title picture, depending on what's happening with Owens and Styles? I mean, obviously, that's your big matchup down the track, a face-off between Styles and Nakamura, teasing that. Do you want to go with Kevin Owens? I'm just trying to think of a mid-card SmackDown heel at the moment that would be a natural progression from Ziggler for Nakamura. And that is a tough one. But, you know, I've been listening to you, Bruce, and one thing with Nakamura, his promos and whatnot, I don't know about you guys, but I still wouldn't have had him speak yet. I like the silent assassin, kick-ass Japanese guy, and I think that's the type of character that can cross all cultures. We all like those cool Japanese guys that kick ass and say very little, and that's what I'd like to see from Nakamura. Even when he smiles and he shows that black mouth guard, to me it's that, if you're saying something to him and he smiles and he shows all black from that mouth guard, you know you're about to get your ass kicked. But these are little things that they could do with Nakamura that would make him really stand out. So just keeping him as that silent assassin I would have liked. But moving back to the question, I don't know, Bruce and Colin, I'm scratching my brain here. That is a tricky one. After Ziggler, where do you go? I probably need to think about that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see him out of the mid-card pretty early on, however this thing goes with Dolph Ziggler. And the place to me just seems like if you think, you know, him versus Jinder Mahal, that's you've got style problems there. I would want to show the best of Nakamura, and the best of Nakamura is the performance from, you know, stepping out, to the music till when he leaves, and doing that. You know, and I think we talked about this a little bit, but just to backtrack a little bit, I wish that they had made it a dramatic moment when he spoke. When, you know, even giving the impression, or giving people the impression without even saying anything about it, that, you know, this is another Japanese wrestler who can't speak English, but then have someone say something to him and then come back with it, but not have him be, and we talked about this too, not have him going back and forth like the rest of the roster does, you know, in a 15-minute segment with somebody. I think that's where it gets exposed, and that's where it's not so great. And, but yeah, just like, you know, you're like, damn, he said that, you know, like, whoa. And then do it again to prove that he's more than just learning something phonetically, that he speaks English, and he does. I like the idea of the U.S. title when I think about it. And there's two ways to do it. One of them is that Styles doesn't win the title. You give enough time for AJ Styles and Kevin Owens to have somewhat the feud. Then you can either throw Nakamura into it and have Nakamura as not a heel, but as Shinsuke Nakamura, the phenomenon, the baby face. Not even the baby face, but the guy who wrestles everybody. He doesn't cheat. He's great to watch. That way you can have him, you can have AJ Styles be a baby face against him, and you can have the great match. You know, just go have the great match, and hopefully Nakamura has some, it can turn it on for certain opponents in certain matches. So that would be one you would hope for to wow people. And then Kevin Owens is, just the heel against Nakamura. And then also, I'm not the biggest fan. In fact, I'm sick of him. But you can do the three. You can do the three-way. You can do the, for the title. And change the title back and forth a little bit. I know people are tired of that we're titled that with Charlotte's Raw women's title, but kind of have a program where you've got a more traditional babyface in AJ Styles, you've got a more traditional heel in Kevin Owens, and then you've got Nakamura as just a star, and he's not winning anything by cheating, but he's winning things by, he's resourceful and a trickster and all the things that he can do with that, but still fit his character. When I think about it, that's where I'd like to see it go, at least in the beginning, at least for a while, because I think it is important that Nakamura wrestles, and even Dolph Ziggler fits into this, those good workers, to show what he can do as far as like why this is something exciting and different for them. And then later on once he's established, and you assume that he'll be established, but once he's established, then you can do Jinder Mahal, you can do Randy Orton, you can do some of the ones where the style matchup isn't going to be as beneficial to him. That's kind of, I mean, what I see, but I definitely see Sunday night as an important match for WWE and Nakamura, and for WWE to show that they can take a different type of act and put it over and make it work.
So how do you book the match between Nakamura and Ziggler? Is it a 5 to 6 minute squash? Is it a competitive 15 minute match? What are you trying to get out of this? Are you trying to, you obviously want to put over Nakamura's skills in the ring, but having said that, majority of people that are going to be watching on Sunday are going to be people that have probably already seen Nakamura at NXT Special, so they already know what he can bring to the table. What's the message you're trying to send here with the booking?
With Nakamura, I would want to go 15 minutes, and I would want to have a match that gave you a taste of him being resourceful. It gave you a taste of his trademark moves. And also, I very much wouldn't want what's been going on with Seth Rollins. In other words, you got this babyface who just gets his ass kicked, and that doesn't have the connection to the audience that Ricky Morton had 35 years ago. I mean, it's just that Ziggler is credible. He's not getting killed, but Ziggler is. The foil. Ziggler is helping to show all the things that Nakamura can do. And then I very much think that Nakamura wins clean, and there's no BS. There's no Dolph Ziggler has to get his heat back or any of that kind of stuff that you get from not even bell to bell, but from the moment the music starts all the way through, you get this time you get the first complete complete Shinsuke Nakamura feature match. And Ziggler is working hard to provide all that too, and both of them work hard. And I go 15 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, but 15 more like 15 minutes. I think if you go 6 minutes, it's not enough to give people who are have heard of this guy, and there's still even for people that watch the W Network, there's a lot of people that just watch the W Network and they watch those Sunday night shows. There's still people that aren't watching NXT and not sampling him until he gets to this point. So I'd want to give them that experience. I want to give them that whole thing. And that's what you did. I think Jason. So let's take another phone call. Let's move to Kenny from Tennessee. Kenny, you're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
Hey, Bruce. Hey, Jason. Can you hear me all right?
Hear you fine.
That's awesome. First of all, I want to say it's an honor to get to talk one-on-one with Jason from Australia, man. How you doing?
I'm going good, mate. Honor is a very strong word. I'm sure you're happy, but honor, I think you're overselling it there. Believe me, it's not so much of an honor, my man.
I kind of think it is. I think you're one of the smartest people that I have heard as far as callers that bring in insights to pro wrestling, and already you've brought in a lot of great insights for Backlash. And I want to give your take on the women's match that's coming up, the six-pack challenge. And I know heading into Backlash, Carmella beat Naomi on the recent edition of SmackDown Live. I want to get your guys' opinion on where you think they're going so far with Charlotte as far as her build since she got into SmackDown Live. I'm really not so much sure if she's automatically a babyface. I still think that we might see some sort of weirdo scenario where they may recreate a brand new Four Horsewomen of some sort. And who knows, maybe even Becky Lynch turning heel. I've got a feeling one of the six will probably turn heel on Sunday. And that's really all I got to say because I got to head back to work and break, and you guys have a good rest of the night.
Appreciate it, Kenny.
All the best, Kenny.
Yeah, I think Alexa Bliss, number one, comes out of this with the title. I don't think it's time to change the title. But, yeah, the intrigue in this match, and it does kind of drive me crazy, the six-pack. I mean, with everybody having to get their time in, having to do some things. But hopefully they've got a story to tell here. And the intrigue is Charlotte and Becky Lynch, and Charlotte on the side of the I hesitate to say it this way, the good girls. So, how that continues to play out. I don't see Charlotte turning because, as I said before, they've shown her being heelish and upset with who she's teamed with and not getting along with them. But, I mean, I did like when she turned and said, then I'm coming for the title. I thought that was wait a minute, she's coming for the Raw title. Excuse me, but not Alexa Bliss, but she's coming for that title. And hopefully we have some ins and outs and the story gets more intriguing and as who's going to do what. Does it turn into a new version of the NXT Four Horsewomen, or what exactly is it? Jason, save me from this, please.
Bruce, everyone knows what you're saying. It's hard to keep up with these changes. It's hard to keep up with the pay-per-view, so don't worry about that. I think we all knew what you meant. In relation to Charlotte, right, leading up to this quote-unquote babyface turn, to me, she wasn't showing any babyface tendencies. I thought what they were going to do, and I've always liked this in wrestling, and remember they did this with The Rock in late 98. They made him a babyface for a couple of months, and you just got behind it, and then he turned heel again. And it's like they took it away from you. And I thought that's what they were doing with Charlotte. And I noted the language that they were using when she got drafted, and even JBL was saying, and of course, JBL's no stranger to hyperbole, but he was really putting over Charlotte as, this is the greatest draft pick that we got to SmackDown. And I thought what they are going to do is, you get people used to cheering her just for a little bit, and then you take it away from them. And I think that's what they're going to do with Charlotte. And the fact that she's told Naomi that I am coming after your title, she can use that in a heel promo and say, I told you to your face. You should have expected this. I told you. Don't be surprised. So I actually do think that rather soon she's going to go back to showing that vicious side, but they're just giving the audience a taste of what it's like to cheer Charlotte, but I think she's going to come back as a bigger heel. At least I think that's what the plan is.
I hope you're right. I'm not sure about it, but I hope you're right, and I hope they pull that off, which means she's got to, you know, she's got to kind of stay heelish, but help her team, help her side, and then when the time comes, you know, either pull the rug out from under Naomi or just, you know, go after to get that title. I don't know. That might be, you know, that might be there. I do like the idea of, a lot of times in wrestling, I think it's most effective when you either get close to giving people what they want and then pull it back or make them wait for it, or, as you said, give it to them for a little bit. I'm not sure people want – now, I will say this. I don't think people are ready for Charlotte to be a babyface. But give them a taste of it where they start to like it and then pull it away for later on down the line. And I'm much more comfortable with what you were suggesting than her being, you know, her being the babyface women's face of SmackDown, because people aren't ready for it and she's not – it's like – let her become kind of legendary as a meanie and then get that 515-605-9345. But we'll see where this goes. And hopefully I've been kind of, we'll see, you know, with this. So hopefully they do have some detail work done here and some places to go with this and not just, well, we want her to be, you know, she was a heel on Raw and the number one woman. So now we'll make it different on SmackDown and she'll be the number one babyface. I think I would hope more than that for this. 478, you're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
How you doing, Bruce? How you doing, Jason?
Oh, my God, Darrell. I'm sorry. Okay. That kind of like, believe it or not, as usual, I'm kind of juggling some stuff here, so but it's working out well. We're right there. So Darrell, I apologize for that. Usually I'm right on 478, so
<It's>
go ahead. Maybe it's the Secret Empire that's upsetting me, so go ahead.
Oh, it should hopefully it'll be over by August, but that's another show. But yeah. Just to touch on something that y'all were speaking about, Charlotte, I hope they do not keep her or turn her face, because, and this is a question to you guys, if you're going to keep her, if you're going to turn her face, wouldn't you need a different type of heel? A heel who's as strong as her, but a different type of heel. Maybe not who can hit it on the mic like she can, but like dominant, vicious. Maybe even like a Brock Lesnar. That's why I was hoping if they do turn a face, you bring up a heel Oscar. What you think about that? That's my first thing.
Yeah, Jason, take that, and I'll chime in.
Yeah, nice to speak to you, Darrell. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't see any heels on SmackDown, which are natural heels against Charlotte. I don't like the matchup of a babyface Charlotte against a heel Natalya. I know she's trying Natalya, but I just find her too likable. You know, to me, she's like a female equivalent of Cesaro. I find it very hard to boo her. She just has, you know, I just like Natalya, and I think a lot of people do too. So I don't like that matchup. I could see Carmella. She can come across very annoying, but I don't feel she's a strong enough matchup for Charlotte. And Tamina, I'm not sure she's quite there yet. So I agree 100% what you're saying, Darrell. I definitely think that they're going to keep her, you know, on that heel side.
Yeah, Darrell, one of the things, I very much like that you said that if Charlotte's going to be the babyface, if Charlotte's going to be on one side, you're going to need a strong badass for her to fight against. And now she's bigger than the other women, and that helps her with being a heel. So, you know, someone physical, someone that you know, someone that can be kind of scary, not even a cheating, cowardly heel, but, you know, a dominant heel. And Tamina Snuka looks that way, but she's not that way. She's not at that point yet in her career, if she ever gets there. And Asuka could be, that could, done right, that could be the one. Now, it would be interesting to get, you know, it'd be interesting. I think you could get another woman to do some of the speaking for and do some of the heelish, you know, mannerisms and that, and then just let her be the badass in the ring and go with that with, you know, with Charlotte. Now, I also think that Asuka's there in WWE to be the impressive woman on NXT. And so is Vince McMahon thinking in terms of, all right, now we're going to put her on the main roster. She doesn't speak English and she has this, you know, she has this very physical style. Is that what they want to do? But yeah, but just storytelling tropes tell you that, you know, you got to have strong opposition for a character like Charlotte, or it's not going to, you know, as a babyface, it's not going to work at all, because she's, you know, if the babyface just wins all the time and there's no conflict, there's no suspense to it. You know, Hulk Hogan won all the time. I mean, he's the epitome. He's the model for that type of superhero character, but King Kong Bundy injured him. You know, he was put on, you know, Paul Orndorff turned on him and beat him up. Andre the Giant was Andre the Giant and undefeated and all that. So he was put up against the odds against these monsters, Earthquake and all the rest. And then he would persevere. But if it was, you know, if he was wrestling, you know, the Brooklyn Brawler or something every, you know, in every match, that wouldn't have worked, because after a while you'd just be like, I've seen it. There's no suspense here. There's no nothing. So, I mean, that's, you've got to put, I think you're right, Darrell. I mean, you've got to put somebody, strong against him. You look at that roster, all across it, that's Asuka's the strongest potential one. What else you got for us?
Yeah, and before I ask the second thing, yeah, I think they're looking for Asuka replacement with the two signees from Stardom, the two women
That's
signees
true.
From Stardom. So I think they needed two to replace her because of her Stardom in NXT, and I feel like she will be better on SmackDown roster than putting her in that jumble on Raw. So that's another thing. And she's just a dominant force, almost like a female version of Brock Lesnar. But going to Raw, I know they got the Fatal 5-Way, and I know people have their top two contenders of winning it, either Bray Wyatt or Seth Rollins, but I think neither, because right now Seth Rollins to me is cold as a babyface. I think he might need to go back heel. He doesn't get a pop coming out, and I don't see Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar, because why would Brock stand there and listen to Bray ramble on and talk in circles? But to get you guys' opinion, which one do y'all see? Myself, I see a Finn Balor maybe, and you can do two things with him. You can turn him heel and turn Brock back face, rejoin the Balor Club maybe, or you can have Braun Strowman come out and attack Brock Lesnar since they want him to return, taking Brock's eyes off the title and focusing on Braun Strowman, and then you could potentially get Roman versus Balor since they both got one win against each other.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff going on with this. Jason, take your shot.
I agree with Darrell. I just see, you know, WWE all about marketing. I see the tagline, the Demon and the Beast. I mean, I can just see that. I see that's the type of thing they like to do. And the booking, Balor lost to Roman Reigns. I'm starting to think it will be Balor versus Lesnar. Now, I know you have that size difference, but I think if you do go down that path, you need an angle on Raw where, and I wouldn't mind seeing this, if Balor dressed up as the Demon, cut Lesnar down to size with a couple of kicks or whatnot, and just surprised him, and you sell the point is, in the space of 3 to 4 seconds, Lesnar went from being a foot taller than Balor to a foot below. You know, you need to sell that when Balor turns to this Demon, anything can happen, and Lesnar can't take him too lightly. So I really think you have to get across that point. But yeah, I do see them going with Balor and Lesnar. He would be my favorite. Joe, for me, I wouldn't pull the trigger on that. Part of me, and Wade and Todd talked about this on the VIP show, I would like to see Joe get built up to that big match with Lesnar. So you've got the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. And then, you know, you might want to go to Reigns. But for now, I'm thinking Balor.
That's interesting. I'm just really shocked that neither one of you picked Roman Reigns. They go ahead and pull the trigger on Roman Reigns. Go ahead and have Roman Reigns beat Brock Lesnar now and continue. You know, he took out The Undertaker. He beat Braun Strowman. He beat up Braun Strowman and injured him. And he's on a roll. Have him win this match strong and go and beat Brock Lesnar and be the Universal Champion and take over all of the WWE Universe. Yeah, it's not time to do that. Clearly, I don't know when the time is, but I think they've got to build and build and build and hope some things break their way for that. And you know, big match atmosphere or not for Roman Reigns. And to me, this one's one of those ones, it's you just go down the line and start subtracting. And Bray Wyatt is not, you know, Bray Wyatt with this kind of dull run as WWE champion and the House of Horrors and all, and, you know, that was a flop and a fiasco, not because of him, but still. And just the shoddy way his character is treated and portrayed. So him against Brock Lesnar, I just see, you know, like when I think about that, I see Brock Lesnar with a smirk on his face, you know, and that's not the greatest thing in the world, except for, you know, Brock Lesnar just wipes the floor with the guy. And I mean, that's a Brock Lesnar attraction match, but that doesn't do anybody much good beyond that. It doesn't do Bray Wyatt any good at all. Roman Reigns, as I said, they should figure out something to do with Roman Reigns. It's not Brock Lesnar and not Braun Strowman until they get Braun Strowman back in the picture. I'm not as high as you guys are on Balor versus Brock Lesnar. I very much do agree with Jason as far as you would have to show that Balor can get to Brock Lesnar early on, because if you don't, I mean, you'd have to show it during the buildup of the championship match after Balor won the five-way. And if you don't, I don't think there's going to be a lot there. But and Seth Rollins is flat right now. It's not time, particularly just to beat him would just hurt him even further, and he can't win. So I don't like that either. I'm with Darrell about that. But Balor, I still think this may be a case where, until Balor is just on fire, and he's not on fire right now. He just got back, and they've vacillated a little bit in how they're pushing him. Until he's on fire, I wouldn't put him in the ring against Brock Lesnar, because in the beginning, it's going to be, look at the size differential. It's just human nature, and that's going to work against him until people really do believe in that demon. People really do believe in that you know, in him and how good he is and what a fighter he is. I didn't think that they ever should have done, even at the height of Daniel Bryan's popularity, I didn't think you'd do a Daniel Bryan Brock Lesnar match. And so I'm like that with this. And Daniel Bryan was much more over and people liked him a lot more. So, you know, they might've been able to get the ultimate underdog match out of that. But I still think that was going to be problematic. So I end up with Samoa Joe. And even though I'm not crazy about, I mean, I very much like Samoa Joe as the killer character and the promos that he does. He's not as over as he should, as you would think he would be, not as he should be. He's as over as he should be. I mean, that's just how life is. But, and the style isn't there, but just go ahead and do badass versus badass, keep him heel. You can even have Triple H, and I know it's not, you know, I know ratings are down, and the last thing Triple H wants to do is appear on the show where the ratings are down, where someone can say, hey, you didn't help the ratings. But I might have him do a little cameo where he's telling Samoa Joe, go and get our title back. You know, go take this from, you know, no one likes Paul Heyman. There's something like that, and Joe's like ready to, after winning that five ways, ready to do it. And then Joe and Brock Lesnar have that kind of bull of the woods match, and Brock Lesnar goes over, and then you move on to the next Brock Lesnar appearance, and you put Joe back in the stack. I don't know that. I think having a good match showing some alpha male qualities against Brock Lesnar would help Joe, but Joe's not at that point either to be that championship thing. And then you come back around with Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns and whatever they're looking to do. So that's where I kind of see it. But I think this is one of those ones, this five-way, where there isn't a candidate, and part of it's because of the clunky booking they've done. There isn't a candidate where you go, they ought to do that one or that one. To me, it's more, here's all these not so great scenarios and not so great things. Which one do you think they can make the most of? And maybe it is Balor, but I would be careful with that. And I think I want to protect Balor for down the line and keep him going. So that's, as I said, that's where I see some of this, or at least a good bit of it. We'll be right back. Callers, hold on. We'll be right back after the break. 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
Four seven, you're up next on the PW Torch livecast.
Oh, hello guys. What's going on?
We're doing all right. How are you? Tell us your name.
I'm Willie. I'm calling from Orlando.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I just have a general question regarding TNA, WWE, and the broken gimmick. If that's fine with you guys.
Sure.
Yeah, we all know that the broken neck. Matt Hardy character was all over back in Impact Wrestling and the scene before coming over to WWE. Do you guys feel that they have lost the momentum of the character because of this whole situation between Impact Wrestling and WWE? Because it used to be so over back then, and it was such a hot act. But I think the more the time passes between them until they reach an agreement, and if they reach an agreement, that I just feel it just won't be as successful as it was in TNA back then. And that's all I got. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. It's a good question. And I'm going to throw it to Jason. Jason?
I agree with William 100%. I think every passing week that goes by and he's not implementing that character, I think it is losing a little bit of momentum. And the other thing I've got to think about is that everyone wants him to go against Bray Wyatt if he does introduce that character. I don't know if Bray Wyatt's a hot enough character for this. I mean, you know, Bray Wyatt just doesn't win any feuds, and he hardly wins matches. He looks strong at the end of certain segments and angles, but ultimately he comes out a loser. Look, I got to admit, I was down the line with this whole broken thing. Like, I watched most of it, and I was like, oh, okay, I can see why people like this, but I was sort of in the middle with it. I would like to see what he would do in WWE. But the other thing that I risk see happening is that the expectations for this have been built so high. In a WWE environment, there's every chance that it could let people down, the implementation of it. So I'm a little bit cautious with it.
Yeah, I think I'm willing to wait. And of course, we're assuming that WWE buys gets the trademarks from whatever problems there are cleared up with with Impact, and then is able to get them, everything gets free and clear, whatever those difficulties are. I see them kind of heading this way, though, in that protect the Hardys, do the Hardys. There's little tiny taste of the broken gimmick as far as what they're is what particularly Matt Hardy does from time to time. But go ahead and have the feud with Cesaro and Sheamus, and put over the Hardys strong, the traditional Hardys. Have them win these matches. Don't do the 50-50 split up matches. Go ahead and have them win coming into a tag title match, and then have Sheamus and Cesaro beat them. And then Matt Hardy can start the cycle again of I wouldn't do exactly the same thing they did on TNA, even though, you know, there is a part of the audience that didn't see a good part of the audience didn't see it. Although it does seem like, you know, the audience is certainly aware of it. But I would do it in a little bit different way, but there's something wrong with Matt Hardy. And then again, he pulls his brother into it and they recreate this, but it's a new version of it's version 7 or whatever you want to say, but it's a new version of Matt Hardy. Maybe you don't use the broken, but you use some of this and you bring in the groundskeeper, you bring in the Hardy's compounds, you do all that stuff and try to get it with that. And send Sheamus and Cesaro as heels, but as dominant tag team champions against the other teams on Raw and just do the Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy. And I wouldn't go ahead and have them wrestle each other again, but I would have them acting weird and doing all this stuff and see if you can't recreate something worth merchandising. And part of this is also that even though I don't think people have caught on, the universe or most of the fans have caught on, that beside the Hardys look like the Hardys, they act like the Hardys and they can do some of their signature stuff, those wild dives. They're not physically up to what they used to be, and you want to stay ahead of that. And I thought the broken Matt Hardy gimmick was great for that, and for both him and Jeff. And so, you know, go in with King Max, will do all that, and try to make it part of, you know, I don't even like this as an analogy, but the entertainment portion of the show. But yeah, it might not. You know, in a WWE setting, it might be like ECW and, you know, not great in a WWE setting and many other things we've seen, the NWO and all that. It might not, you know, one of the things that they had the freedom, number one, to do exactly what they wanted to do on Impact. They won't have Jeremy Borash kind of keeping the same tone of production. They'd have to recreate that. And they, you know, and maybe the second time isn't, you know, it becomes like a lot of gimmicks, you know, the second time not quite as good as the other. So I'm hoping they recreate it in a way that's fresh and can do some of that if they do this. And, but yeah, as time goes by, it's there. And it's also just worth saying that, it got one semi ratings increase in the dog days of Dixie Carter in TNA. And it worked great on the indie scene. I saw it, you know, as far as like, you know, the Hardys were able to merchandise a lot, you know, t-shirts and all kinds of stuff and make appearances and it helped the Hardys brand more than it helped TNA. So does this work on a bigger stage? We would find out, you know, that's part of it, but I think the shelf life on the Hardys, just as the Hardys that have been in WWE for all those years, isn't that long. And, I think there's more to them than, you know, the Dudley's Nostaljack was a year or so ago. So we'll see, you know, we'll roll with where that goes. Let's go to Jay in Tampa, Florida. Jay, welcome to PW Torch Livecast.
Hey, Bruce and Jason, how y'all doing?
Doing well.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, cool. I hear you fine.
Yeah,
I hear you fine.
All right. Just to piggyback off of that real quick about the broken universe, sometimes I wonder if the House of Horrors was just a little taste or a sample of, because sometimes I think that the people on the creative team or maybe even the special effects guys would love to dive into something like that. I can only imagine how much more they can do with those special effects than the little that the Hardys had to work with in TNA. I'm not sure if I want to see all of that, but it at the same time, I think it might be pretty interesting. My question I had was about going back to the women. Seems like ever since Charlotte joined SmackDown, in my opinion, she's kind of overshadowed Naomi a little bit, which, I mean, it is what it is. That's why I disagree so much with Vince calling wrestlers superstars, because it truly is a difference between a star and a superstar. Because when your superstar can overshadow a champion, because it just seemed like the last couple of weeks, all I can think of is Charlotte. segments. I totally forget that Naomi is even the champion. I don't know if they
get yeah, just did.
I don't. Yeah, it's not the same as like when I watch NXT. Definitely, you know, their champion runs the show. Asuka, you can't watch it and think of the women on NXT without thinking of Asuka. You know, so I think that is a big difference there. And I don't know if Asuka was to join SmackDown, I think it would be good. I think Raw should go ahead and pull the trigger with maybe Amber Moon just to kind of to mix it up a little bit, add something extra. It seemed like the women on Raw to me are missing something at this point. My other comment or question is it me or does it just seem like Randy Orton hasn't, you know, in this situation right here with Jinder Mahal and knowing that the Bollywood brothers or Singh brothers or whatever, it doesn't even seem like, unless I've missed something, it doesn't even seem like he's put his hands on them yet. I don't see how they can have.
He hasn't.
Yeah, I don't get that. Unless they're going to pull this out for longer than we think it's going to be. I just been seeing every week where they're getting involved in the vintage Randy Orton that we know of with have run through these guys and KO'd them all in the back and everything. It seemed like they keep being a part of either ruining matches or getting the upper hand. And
now, do you mean the Singh brothers, or do you mean the Singh brothers and Jinder Mahal as far as Randy Orton getting his hands on everybody?
I was thinking just the Singh brothers themselves. It seemed like even if you're gonna hold off from Orton touching Jinder, which is fine, I would think he would have, you know, KO'd them out of nowhere like 20 times by now.
It is interesting and it is different than Randy Orton before. A couple of comments on what you said, Jay. One of them is they really are trying to put over Jinder Mahal. And so I think that in the beginning, you want, and I, again, the Singh brothers come across too much spirit squatty, too much like, you know, the Stooges of, not of, of Pat Patterson and Jerry Briscoe, but the two small, anyway, it's been a long day. So I can see where if Jinder Mahal was to beat Randy Orton, then the first thing you can do, Randy Orton on the comeback, is beat those two guys up before he gets to Jinder Mahal. The Jinder Mahal is hard to is hiding behind them, or is too tricky, or too whatever. He can't quite get to him, but he can certainly take it out on the two Stooges, and that might be something they're trying to do. If Randy Orton wins, then they could still kind of do the same thing. You know, Jinder Mahal can beat him up after the show and continue this program or something. It just kind of depends, but I definitely think, no way. I definitely think that, Noble and Mercury, thank you. That Noble and Mercury can, you know, that Noble and Mercury in that sense, and they were good, but it was like, still, they were like fools, and it wasn't that big to beat them up. So that's all right. But, I'm kind of rambling here. That's part of it. But it just depends on what they're doing with Jinder. And I think right now, whether he was going to win or lose this match coming up on Sunday for the WWE title against Randy Orton, he was going to – I mean, they were going to put over that act as strong as they could and use Randy Orton to do that. So that's why Randy Orton's been getting beaten more than we've seen getting outsmarted and not getting his hands on anybody to try to build up. I want to see him do that. I don't think it's weakening him yet. I don't think it's to that point, but it's there. As far as the women, I mean, you know, Naomi's reason to be the champion is she wanted to win at WrestleMania in her hometown. That's about all we've been given. And, that she has the ring entrance, and that's about, you know, and there's a little bit of, what I'm trying to say here, on those you didn't, you know, to her, but that's it. And they need to have more with that. I think, I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, I think that's part of it. Jason, do you want to chime in on both these things?
Yeah, I think, Jay, what you're trying to say is that you haven't seen an instance where Jinder Mahal has really gotten his hands on Orton. Orton hasn't gotten his hands on Jinder Mahal. Is that what you're trying to say there?
The Singh brothers. No, I was referring to the Singh brothers. They could have not touched until the pay-per-view, but at least it looks like he would have roughed up the Singh brothers by now. He hadn't touched nobody.
If Randy Orton was like a quiet-up babyface, and the fact that, you know, he hasn't been able to get his hands on these type of people, that would be a good selling point. But I do see what you're saying there. To me, it seems like Randy Orton hasn't got his hands much on Jinder Mahal. Like, Mahal's gotten the advantage over Orton, which you like as a heel, like, against the babyface, because you want the babyface to get revenge. But Randy Orton doesn't come across like that fighter babyface where you really want to see him get his hands on Mahal. I think it's more about the intrigue about whether they're going to book Mahal to beat Orton as opposed to Orton wanting to get his hands on Mahal. But, you know, you could say that about a lot of feuds.
Yeah, you definitely could. Well, appreciate Jason, thank you for ably filling in and co-hosting. A great job, and I was glad our friend taught you about what a good job you do with this stuff, and we'll do this again. Everything's good in Australia. Appreciate all the callers calling in today, and Rich Fan will be back next week. PW Torch Livecast, there's an interview with Wade Keller and Kevin Eck of the WWE creative team. Lots of stuff to listen to. I will be back this weekend with Wade and Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, two parts of it. But thank you, Jason.
You're welcome, Bruce, and thanks for all the kind words to all the listeners. It's been a pleasure.
Great job. Thank you, sir.
As a PW Torch Livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday morning wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. This is life.